Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 24th of June. This hour is suggested in part by one of our listeners during our open line, and it should be a really interesting article. It should be an interesting show. Ben Logan is going to be joining us in a moment. Ben is author, as you well know, of The Land Remembers, A Story of a Farm and Its People. He's worked as a novelist, a nonfiction writer, a lecturer, teacher, producer, writer for TV and radio, lived in New York City for some 20 years, and returned to Seldom Seen, the family farm near Gay's Mills. More than 30 years after he wrote The Land Remembers, he turned to the Mississippi Valley Conservancy to add his cultural contribution to Wisconsin by donating an easement on Seldom Seen Farm that will ensure that it remains in agricultural production. The gift to the people of the state of Wisconsin comes at a time when the need to preserve agricultural land is getting much needed attention, and we draw attention to that issue this hour. We have with us, Ben will be with us in a moment, Tim Jacobson, executive director of the Mississippi Valley Conservancy, a lifelong resident of Wisconsin who grew up working on dairy farms and studying nature, founded the Environmental Law Society at Marquette University and served as its first president, spent 14 years as a lawyer. His practice included environmental law. He serves on the board of directors for Gathering Waters Conservancy, the DNR Stewardship Advisory Council, and Stewardship Access Citizens Advisory Council. And we're happy to have him with us, and Ben will join us. We have some phone problems he does on his end, so we'll get those figured out, and he'll be joining us momentarily, I would imagine. So we go to Tim first. Hi, Tim. Oh, I guess he's on this line. I'm sorry. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
You know, this Mississippi Valley Conservancy is huge. The amount of protection that you're doing and the amount of land that you're helping is vast.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your characterization of it. We've certainly got a lot of land protected in the last dozen years, but the challenge ahead of us is substantial, and we have our work cut out for us.
What's the challenge?
Well, in MVC's seven-county territory, for example, there's 3.4 million acres in these seven counties. We've protected about 9,000 of those acres, and, you know, obviously not all of it is something that we're targeting for protection. But there are a lot of areas within Wisconsin that have yet to be protected that are really important parts of our landscape, both from an ecological perspective as well as from scenic beauty and outdoor recreational opportunities. So the challenge is huge from that standpoint, as well as the problem of ecological restoration, or the challenge of that, because of invasive species and other issues with diminishing wildlife habitat and the loss of really critical natural areas throughout our state.
Mm-hmm. And to be protected means what? Are there different degrees of protection?
Well, we refer to permanent land protection, and there are two ways that land trusts essentially protect land. We can either take ownership of land where we set it aside as nature preserves, essentially, or we can use a tool called a conservation easement, which is what we did in Ben Logan's case with Seldom Seen Farm. In that instance, the land stays in private ownership, but through a legal tool of the conservation easement, we're able to work out an agreement with the landowner to permanently restrict certain activities on the land that would be deemed to be harmful to the natural resources. So usually that includes, you know, residential subdivision, commercial operations, and that sort of thing. And so when we protect land with that tool, it not only stays protected and kept intact for its natural qualities or natural values while that particular landowner owns the land, but even if they sell the land or give it away to their kids, for example, even future owners of the land are bound by those same requirements of the conservation easement. And so that's one tool we use for protecting land. And so when we do this permanent land protection, either through ownership or easement, we can ensure that the land's general character doesn't change in terms of its uses. But then there's the whole restoration, ecological restoration component of land protection, which is about restoring natural communities and habitats before they degrade to the point that they can no longer sustain the wildlife or the rare plant species that may be found there.
And restoring sounds like a big thing.
Yeah, it is a big thing. It's a huge task. I think a lot of people probably don't realize how rare some of the habitat types are that we have in Wisconsin. I think there's a tendency for people to think about, well, if they need to protect something rare in the world, they've got to go down to some tropical rainforest in South America to do it.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, we have some of the rarest habitats right here in Wisconsin. A prime example of that is oak savanna. We have only 1/100 of 1% of the original oak savanna remaining. And that oak savanna that exists is in the process of degrading in many instances because there isn't the conditions that existed before European settlement that were favorable to maintaining prairies and oak savannas oftentimes don't exist today. And so we have to take active steps to manage those areas or those entire communities of plants and animals that exist in a certain relationship can be lost. And so it's really rare things that we're talking about. And so we're really in a struggle to protect these really great places in Wisconsin that still remain.
Mm-hmm. And tell me more about the animals that would go away, would become extinct perhaps, if we didn't have the oak savannas.
I think I have an easier time talking about, for example, some of the prairies we have when it comes to specific animal species. For example, the Mississippi Valley Conservancy has protected a piece of land we call the New Amsterdam Grasslands. It's a 310-acre prairie site. And there we have quite a number of threatened bird species that nest in the grasslands there. They're grassland nesting birds. They need large areas of open grasslands in order to nest. And because of the way we've altered the landscape, they're not able to reproduce as effectively, and they become rarer and rarer. So if we can save some places like that and set it aside for them as habitat, we can prevent further decline of these species. And some of the birds which are threatened but not yet endangered, hopefully we can provide enough habitat that we can prevent them from ever becoming endangered species. So it's, you know, what the old saying of a stitch in time saves nine. If we mm-hmm. can do that for our wildlife, that's a great thing. With oak savannas, it's, at least with regard to my understanding, it's more an issue of the suite of plants that often exists. And oak savanna is essentially, and just a little disclaimer, as you mentioned in my introduction, I'm a lawyer by training, not a biologist, but so I'll do my best. But there's a suite of plant community that exists with oak savanna in that transition zone between prairie and forest, where you have oftentimes open-grown oak trees, but because it's so open, you have an understory of essentially prairie-type plant species that exist there, and it's important to maintain those areas where those plant species, you know, are going to be diminished or lost.
Mm-hmm. At what point did we reach some kind of tipping point when we realized, Tim, that we need to be very careful of the kind of development we're doing and what we're doing to the land, or we're going to just lose so much and we'll lose it forever, you know, building uncontrollably. Did that happen at some point?
Well, I don't know if I can define a tipping point and whether whether we're long past it or still reaching it, but there's certainly a greater realization that we have to act now to protect the most special parts of our landscape. And, you know, if you look at the statistics, the numbers on how we utilize land, again, changes to the landscape kind of, you know, take place essentially kind of slowly over time. It's hard to observe. It's kind of like a child. If we raise a child ourselves, we see them grow every day, and it's harder to notice some of the changes. But if you're an uncle or an aunt and you sporadically see a child, and maybe they were 6 years old when you saw them once, and then you see them when they're 10, and all of a sudden you see this dramatic change. And so I think we become adapted and so used to the changes in our landscape that we stop paying attention to them to an extent. And so we need to sometimes step back and say, really, what is happening to our landscape? And fortunately, there are some good numbers out there that explain what's going on. For example, It's projected that in about 20 years, we're going to have another 1 million people in the state of Wisconsin. The population is projected to go from about 5.6 to 6.4 million. Adding another 1 million people to our landscape is obviously going to create a lot more development pressure. With regard to agricultural land like Ben Logan's farm, you know, we're losing 30,000 acres every single year to development, 30,000 acres of agricultural land being developed. I believe it's 15 million acres have been lost overall of ag land has been lost to development since 1950 in Wisconsin. Ooh. So it's an enormous number. And if you look at it from a national scale in terms of natural lands, you're talking about 2 million acres every single year lost to development nationwide. And so the pace of development is continuing to grow, and the landscape is being altered in dramatic ways. There's been some research done at the University of Wisconsin-Madison by Volker Radiloff and others about some changes with regard to our landscape. And I've got a wonderful series of slides, which unfortunately we can't show over radio, but it shows changes in housing density in the Great Lakes region starting in 1940, going through the present, and then projected to 2030. And when you look at those maps and how the change in housing density is occurring, it's almost like and I don't want to be negative about the fact that human presence on the landscape is important, but it's almost like a spreading cancer across the landscape if you think about it in terms of not a deliberate process many times as to how we protect the most precious parts of our landscape.
Mm-hmm.
We in the land trust community are not anti-development, but we want to see development occur in responsible ways.
Sure.
And to not take the best parts of our landscape that should remain natural and to diminish those through inappropriate development. So it's a question about being thoughtful about our landscape and protecting the best parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we start to analyze what's happening to our landscape and start to see the numbers of the tens of thousands and millions of acres that get converted from their natural state or from agricultural land into developed land, It becomes shocking.
Ben is going to join us for a few moments. Ben Logan, the author of The Land Remembers, a story of a farm and its people. Ben has, as I said earlier, worked as a novelist, a nonfiction writer, a lecturer, a teacher, and he was in New York for a number of years and returned to Seldom Seen Farm, the family farm near Gays Mills. He has recently turned to the Mississippi Valley Conservancy to add his contribution to Wisconsin by donating an easement on Seldom Seen Farm that will make sure that it remains in agricultural production. It's quite a gift to the people of the state of Wisconsin and to the land in the state of Wisconsin. And Ben's going to join us for a few moments to talk about that donation. Ben Logan, thank you so much for being with us.
Good afternoon. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. What made you decide to preserve Seldom Seen Farm this way? Why was that important?
Well, it really goes back to an earlier decision of the book, The Land Remembers, that my goal in writing that book was to give the land a voice. And then turning the land over to the Conservancy was another step in that. And we're in a threatening time, I think, that we have to figure out a way to give the land power, to give it a voice. And I don't think we've quite faced up to the seriousness of all this yet. That it's almost, I'm not willing to propose what I'm about to say yet.
What are you going to say?
But that the land almost needs to be licensed.
Hmm.
And given a voice, almost given the status that we give state and federal parks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so far-fetched when you think that way. So I think it's hard not to sound too radical here, but I think the land needs protection,
mm-hmm.
and there are various ways of doing that.
So when you think of this donation and your land at Seldom Seen 100 years from now, Ben, what do you see?
That's a particularly complex question because it's coming at a time when, for instance, careers in the United States, that the average person will have 6 careers during their lifetime. Things are changing faster than we know how to keep up with them, I think. And I don't think we've quite dealt with finding ways of ensuring the safety of the land.
Mm-hmm. What did you think, Tim, of Ben's contribution? I mean, it's significant in so many ways, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And we are so grateful at the Mississippi Valley Conservancy for Ben's donation of the conservation easement on his farm. I just think it's incredible. The symbolic value of it is tremendous. This land, the Seldom Seen Farm, of course, is the subject of Ben's book, The Land Remembers, which is just a delightful book. And now we not only have that farm being immortalized in the words of Ben's book, but it's also now, you know, protected physically as a vibrant, productive piece of our rural heritage. And so to have that there, not only as in book form, but in tangible form where people can visit and see this. And you asked the question about the, you know, what about the farm 100 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in terms of how I see it, the people can still, you know, the folks that go there now, they're called pilgrims. The neighbors, you know, would call up Ben and say, hey, there's some pilgrims looking for you. They want to visit your farm. And fortunately, because of the conservation easement, pilgrims will still be able to get out there on Zins Road 100 years from now and drive up and see that there is this farm there and that it will retain its character over time. And so that is very heartening to me, that to know that that step has been taken. And so Ben's generosity in doing that is tremendous. And so we're very grateful.
And will the land be farmed?
Ben wanted to ensure that the land was available for agricultural production. About 50% of the roughly 103 acres is tillable land, ridgetop fields, and the other 50% is steep hillsides and woods and whatnot. And so the conservation easement provides that the ag fields can remain in agricultural production as long as sustainable farming practices are utilized. And it doesn't require farming, but it allows whoever owns the land at any point in time to sustainably farm the land.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit more, Ben, about the place of the farm in your life and in your family's life. It goes back some time for you and your family, doesn't it?
Yes, it was a way of life, of course. And I tell people I was very intelligent. I chose marvelous parents. And my father had a feel for protecting the land. And my mother, she took the garden, for instance, so seriously. And it was part of our lives. And we didn't... It didn't occur to us that we would need to almost have legal protection for the land.
Mm-hmm.
But we learned as we went. But I think there are other breaking points that we don't quite know how to deal with yet. The land can speak, and the land is telling us that there is trouble ahead. And that's why the Conservancy and the idea of land being officially protected is so damned important.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was an extraordinary gift, Ben. We wish you all the best, and thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, appreciate your interest, and that's what it's going to take, is people who give a damn.
That's always the case, Ben, isn't it? It always takes people who give a damn. I like that. I'll use that.
Instead of the Norwegian joke that's going around, things are going pretty good, but we can fix that. The cynical view.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Ben.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Ben Logan joining us for a few moments. And we'll continue our conversation and welcome phone calls for Tim. Tim Jacobson is the executive director of the Mississippi Valley Conservancy. And we're doing this show because a listener told us about Ben's contribution to the Conservancy of Seldom Seen Farm. And so we're talking about conservation and the marvelous work on the part of the Mississippi Valley Conservancy and all that needs to be done. It was interesting that Ben said there is trouble ahead. We'll follow through on that in a moment with Tim. And welcome your calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you would like to join us by email, then that is something you could do, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we have a lot of people calling in, which is great. Tim Jacobson, we're just going to put Tim on another line here and start taking your phone calls. Tim is the executive director of the Mississippi Valley Conservancy, and he has been, he's got a long history of working on the land here in Wisconsin, on dairy farms, studying nature, founded the Environmental Law Society at Marquette University. And he's with us now to talk about the work of the Conservancy. And we thank Ben Logan for joining us. Ben is close to, if not 90 years old now. And I know many of you are quite attached to his lovely book, The Land Remembers. Our phone number for you to join on-air conversation now about the work with the Conservancy is Tim Jacobson is our guest, and the number here is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Before we get to our phone calls, Tim, it was, you know, in addition to a humorous note, a slightly ominous note from Ben that there's trouble ahead, which reminds me of a song, Trouble Ahead, Trouble Behind. What do you think he was referring to, the trouble ahead? Do you worry about trouble ahead?
Well, I do worry about it to an extent, and I think that goes back to the statistics I was referring to, the massive changes in demographics or population growth, our increasing sprawling types of development that take up, gobble up important parts of the landscape, the spread of invasive species. All of that is huge, and it's something to be concerned about. We need to be vigilant, and we need to pay attention to that and make sure that we're taking steps to address the need for conservation. I would like to kind of comment also on another thing that Ben said, in that he put the conservation easement on his farm, permanently protected it, because he wanted to give the land a voice. Mm-hmm. And It's interesting to me. Ben was a student of Aldo Leopold's at the University of Wisconsin, and Aldo Leopold, of course, who wrote the Sand County Almanac, said, "We abuse land because we regard it as a commodity belonging to us. Mm-hmm. When we see land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect." And I see, you know, Ben's obviously, those two, I think, had a lot of good interaction back when Ben was a student. And I think they probably shared some ideas and still carry forward some similar ideas in their writings and in Ben's thoughts. And I think there's a lot of parallels between Ben's effort to give land a voice and Aldo Leopold's idea that land is part of a community, and that we share that community with the land and should be working with the land and not just regarding it as a commodity.
Yes. Let's go to Maggie, our first caller for you from Blue River. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. This is so wonderful. I'm enjoying this so much. My husband, David, and I donated an easement to Mississippi Valley Conservancy a couple of years ago, and I wanted to encourage anybody, especially out here in these five counties that the MVC serves, to seriously think about this. The more people who start to realize that their land is so valuable, just don't diminish that thought. And the more research we're doing out here, the more bird surveys we're doing, the more plant surveys we're doing on private land out here in the Driftless area, we're finding all kinds of rare and endangered and threatened species that really, really need to be protected. So I passionately ask you to seriously think about a conservation easement on your property. Even if you don't think it's something that's worth saving, you might be very, very surprised to realize how valuable it is.
Well, you've made an excellent plea.
Yeah. Thanks, Maggie.
Thank you. I love you, Tim. It's a great organization.
And, you know, our landowners are so important. I mean, they're, of course, the reason we're doing this. And none of this conservation work would happen if it wasn't for the commitment of the landowners, because land trusts operate solely on a voluntary basis. I mean, we don't regulate land use. We don't tell people how to use their land. We are merely a tool or resource for landowners who have a conservation ethic and want to protect their land. And nothing we do can occur, and we can't accomplish anything if it isn't for landowners who care about their land and see it as something more than a commodity and see the long-term value of caring for it. One of our landowners who donated a conservation easement quoted Willa Cather, and unfortunately I don't think I'm going to remember the quote precisely, but it basically says that, you know, we are kind of caretakers of the land for a while, and that's how we need to think about the land.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thank you so much for your call, Maggie.
Thanks, Maggie.
Bye-bye.
Matt from Liberty Pole is next. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Just wanted to say thank you to Tim and also to Mr. Logan for donating that easement. And I know that when that easement was donated and dedicated, Secretary of Ag, Rod Milstein, came out to honor them. And I just have concerns about ominous things happening. At the same time, we're doing things like this. In Vernon County, where I live, there's a millionaire developer from Illinois who wants to put in 3,200 dairy cows directly above a Class 1 trout stream. And at the same time, the state is honoring Mississippi Valley Conservancy's work. They're paving the road for that type of agriculture. And I'm just wondering what Tim thinks about the future for our rural community and stewardship if that type of agriculture ends up dominating rural Wisconsin. I know in Ben Logan's book that interconnectedness between neighbors and people on the land was a theme that ran throughout. And I just have a hard time believing that millionaire developers from Illinois who have poor environmental track records will practice the same type of feeling towards the land. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Well, that's an excellent question, and it's a tough one to tackle, especially from the perspective of a land trust, because as I indicated, we don't regulate land use, and we only work with willing landowners who want to see their land protected. So if somebody comes in and buys up land and wants to use it for something that may be an inappropriate use, or they're abusing land, especially absentee landowners who maybe not have any personal connection to the land like Ben Logan and his family did, you know, that's a tough issue. And the big part of the problem is a lot of these rural counties in Wisconsin don't have any zoning. Vernon County, which the caller referenced, doesn't, to my knowledge, have any countywide zoning in place. There is zoning in specific municipalities. Fortunately, you know, Wisconsin has a comprehensive planning process that's ongoing. I don't think that's been completed there, and I don't think that any zoning has yet been put in place in Vernon County. And so you have these recurring problems. And I hear about these CAFOs, or confined animal feeding operations, coming up all the time in our more rural areas. And a lot of people are concerned, and they want to know how to address it and how to protect their landscape and the incredible trout streams and other resources that we have in the what's called the Driftless region here in southwest Wisconsin. And so it's important for landowners to get involved in caring about these planning processes and make sure that, you know, good plans get put in place for zoning and that you have proper land use regulation. And voluntary land conservation works best when it's in harmony with, you know, regulatory approaches that the government government may use or employ. And so communities and people can get involved in that process. They have an opportunity to provide input and to take steps to protect those areas. And also it's important for people, the rural land-owning public, to think about this ahead of time and say, maybe I should put my land in a conservation easement. I can still own it. I can still farm it. I can still live there. But I'm going to make sure that my little slice of rural heaven stays that way and it doesn't get used for inappropriate purposes. And the more landowners that we can have that will step up to the plate and make that commitment, that long-term commitment to protecting the land, the less often these problem land uses will become an issue. And so I appreciate the caller's frustration. I don't have an easy answer other than there are steps people can take to try to address that.
So if you put your land in conservation, it's there forever?
If you use a conservation easement, such as what we do with the nonprofit land trust, that is a binding obligation. That gets it's a document that gets recorded at the Register of Deeds and carries forward with the title to the land in perpetuity. There are other types of conservation programs, such as federal programs, that are conservation tools that generally have a specific term of years. I mean, there's something called CRP, the Cropland Reserve Program, which is a federal program where landowners can get paid money by the federal government to essentially set land aside and not be actively farming it. And that can be a useful thing. It's often utilized on marginal farmland, land that's maybe real close to a stream where you may have water pollution issues if you're trying to farm every last acre, or it may be something that's on a steep hillside where you would cause significant erosion problems if you're farming it. So those conservation programs have a role and they're important, but they are not permanent means of conservation. And because after the contract is up, you know, whether it's 10 or 20 years or something, the contract ceases and the landowner can do whatever they want with the land. That is not the case with a conservation easement with a nonprofit land trust. The easements we structure are intended to be in force forever. And so when Ben Logan made a commitment to protect Seldom Seen Farm, it wasn't for a 10-year period or a 20-year period. It's so that people can come back to Seldom Seen Farm hopefully 200 years from now right. and still see the farm as it exists today. Hmm. And that's, it's an important commitment, but it's right. really a commitment of love for the land and for this beautiful place in which we live.
Lynn from Menominee is next. Hi, Lynn.
Well, good morning. What an interesting and timely topic. Just real briefly, my husband and I own a 200-acre dairy farm, very small by today's standards in this area, and our son decided he wanted a dairy farm, so we are in the process of selling it to him, and he and his wife thoroughly enjoy that way of raising a family. And then, funny, we moved down to my family farm to try to keep it in the family. It's been in the family 138 years, and my husband is farming this land, and it's dairy, and we're enjoying it. But right now, we're kind of frustrated because currently in our state legislators have proposed to do away with farmland value assessment, meaning that right now farmers get a tax consideration on their farmland property, which makes it so that we can cash flow. And right now they want to do away with that, which could raise property taxes for some farmers up to 2,000%. So this is very disconcerting to us because what we're seeing in our world with commodity prices, just because of the way the economy is now, our milk prices are, I haven't seen such low milk prices in 33 years that we're experiencing right now. So I don't know how we are going to pay more property tax. It's not going to cash flow. It's what's not going to happen. And so that's, so if the state legislatures and the government think that preserving farmland is important, I guess I'm confused as to why they're proposing this. And there is your guest was talking about farmland preservation, and we were enrolled in that, and that's just a promise that you'll keep it in farmland. We were into it for 25 years and gladly did that because we got a little bit off our property taxes, but now they're looking at doing away with that for the northern part of the state. So I guess we're just very frustrated to what farmers do then, just so that they can pay their bills, is they do sell off their property for development. And not that they want to do it, but if the property taxes go up, it's just the way it's got to be. So anyway, but thinking of Ben Logan, there's not a better way to raise a family. We raise 4 children on the farm, and it's now such a novelty. People, relatives come to the farm, and it's like going to Disney. I mean,
oh, great.
Not as pleasant smelling all the time, but it's a novelty, I guess, is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
All right, stay with us. Tim, I'm sure we'll have some comments for you. Tim.
Yeah, I'm no expert on farm economics, but I can understand the caller's, you know, frustration with regard to how land is taxed and the economics, the struggle of maintaining farmland. I do want to kind of touch base on that whole economics issue, and we often hear from rural landowners, from farmers, that, you know, their farm is essentially their 401k, and if they want to retire, and many farm families don't have children who want to take over the family farm, and so they're left with very limited options. If they want to be able to retire, the feeling often is that farmers have to sell the land for development, even if it's an area that maybe it's really good soils or has other special qualities. Maybe the land contains significant wildlife habitat that's not being actively farmed, and they feel economic pressure to have it developed in order to retire. Fortunately, a conservation easement can be one way that a farming family or other rural landowner can, in some instances, you know, have some economic security while at the same time maintaining the integrity of their land. And there are some powerful economic incentives for doing conservation easements. Fortunately, our federal government had the wisdom to pass a few years ago some tax legislation that gives enhanced income tax deductibility incentives for doing conservation easements. And so that's one way that a landowner can get some financial benefits. So not only can they do the right thing for their land and do something they feel good about, that they know they're leaving a legacy for their children and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren to enjoy, but they can also get some financial benefits from doing it. And so it's a win-win situation. It doesn't work for everybody, and everybody's economic situation can be different, but it's nice that we have some financial incentives that can make it easier to do the right thing.
Thank you, Lynn, so much for your call. Our guest this hour, Tim Jacobson, Executive Director of the Mississippi Valley Conservancy. During one of our recent open lines, a listener suggested that we do this story that was precipitated by Ben Logan, who is the author, you'll recall, of The Land Remembers, donating his farm to the Mississippi Valley Conservancy. And so we're talking about what that means and about the marvelous work of the Mississippi Valley Conservancy on many fronts this hour. More phone calls in a moment. One line is open, 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we return to phone calls now. Let's go to Karen from Marquette County. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Glad to be able to get on with you both. We are working with some neighbors on our contingent lands and the Northeast Land Trust to develop a conservation easement on 300 acres in Marquette County. And it sounds to me, Kathleen, like you have several suggestions for additional programs. One would be the CAFO issue and its impact on water and land use. And I think that would be very interesting from the perspective of what powers do communities really have once a big industrial farm comes in. And the other one is the one that the woman just brought up, which is very interesting. I hadn't heard that they were trying to change that, the way the tax is done on farmland. But anyway, two interesting programs.
Mm-hmm.
The question I have for Tim is, Tim, do you know of any work that's being done to help townships or counties interface with land trusts related to maybe reducing some of the dollars that people who want to donate their land could have to contribute for the ongoing kind of maintenance of the easement. I'm wondering about, I know with farmland, there are some things like purchase of development rights,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure that any of that is being done with land that has particularly a conservation aspect rather than a farmland aspect. Do you have any insights into that?
Well, if I'm understanding your question correctly, there are a couple different programs in the state of Wisconsin for grant programs that can provide funding to landowners that conserve their land. We have and have had for many years in Wisconsin something called the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Fund, and that is a grant program that land trusts and municipalities can apply for to obtain grant dollars to pay landowners in some instances for conserving their land. And so that program primarily exists for land that qualifies as wildlife habitat and has, you know, natural features, meaning largely undeveloped and unfarmed land. There is also an acquisition and development rights program as a subset of that that has provided some funding for farmland preservation, although that's been a kind of a tougher nut to crack. It's a competitive grant program, and it's hard to qualify, or has been much harder to qualify for that than the stewardship fund grants for natural lands. But recently, our state has been pushing the idea of the Working Lands Initiative. Rod Nielsen-Stewen, the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture, has been a big advocate for the Working Lands Initiative, and I can't recall off the top of my head exactly what the status of that is at the state government level. But essentially, and I think it's gotten into the budget, but it's a program that will provide grants specifically for farmland protection and for the purchase of conservation easements on farmland. And so I think that's another great tool that will be available. We're fortunate in Wisconsin that not only do we have landowners, individuals, who are willing to make important commitments for protecting land, but our public policy has been such that land preservation, land conservation, I should say, is a really important component of our society. And it's important to recognize when we're talking about these financial issues what impact our natural landscape and our farmlands have on our economy. And it's not, there's oftentimes this thought that doing things that are good for the environment means you're doing something bad for the economy. And that's really a false assumption. For example, in Wisconsin, we have $13 billion per year of tourism revenue. That's a huge component of our economy. And, I mean, why do people come to Wisconsin to recreate? Well, I think it's fair to say that a large portion of that is because of our incredible natural resources. People come here to camp and fish and hike and enjoy our state parks and our natural lands and scenic landscapes. And so it's important to recognize that this is an ongoing source of an infusion of cash into our rural and urban economies when people come into Wisconsin to enjoy what we have that's so special. And our farm economy, I don't have the numbers on it offhand, but I heard Rod Nielsen-Stewen quote the figures about how big of a part of our economy our farming is. And so those two components, farm agriculture and tourism, are huge and so essential for our long-term sustainability as a state and for having good quality of life. And so I may have drifted off your question a little bit, but anyway, I think it's important to recognize those economic benefits of land conservation.
Thanks, Karen. Joan is from Milwaukee and next. Hi, Joan.
Good morning, Tim. I've known Ben Logan, as you know, since we were in college. We had a farm not too far from his, which we put in the conservation easement. And our problem was trying to get the farmers around who have land to do the same. But there is such a mistrust of farmers of the DNR, because it seems the DNR is always questioning. We have to somehow change that, and money seems to be coming in to even change the DNR rules, as, for example, around the Dells, where I grew up, where annexation is ruining the farmland. We lived on the side of the Dells, between the Dells and Portage, which has been zoned for years. But poor Don Nelson, who is the chair, would like to retire in his old age, but the developers are coming in, and once he's gone, the zoning is so important. And how can we change the mentality of our city folk to realize that farming is so tough and farmers are not making money? And the woman who said you have to sell a little piece of land to pay the taxes, Laramo out in Crawford County has beautiful land next to ours, and I would sure hope that you would work on that family to put that land into the conservancy. My husband had the dream of having the whole valley in the conservancy, and with corporations coming in to make money with huge dairy farms and the pollution, huge hog farms, and poor farmers being squeezed to pay taxes, the mentality has to be changed. And, Tim, I need your help to get out there and change it. Ben Logan can't do it on his own. Bless his soul. Seldom Seen is a beautiful place. Our farm is beautiful. But as the developers keep sending mail, wouldn't you like to sell? There's one strip that is not in the conservancy. I've had offer after offer to sell that so that a person from Chicago can come and build a trophy house or change the zoning and have anything they want in that land.
Well, Joan, thank you very much, and we appreciate Joan as another one of our landowners who has made a commitment to the land by protecting the conservation easement. And she raised a good point about, you know, a concern or a reticence or a fear that many landowners have about different conservation options. A lot of that is born out of just a lack of knowledge of some of these opportunities. For example, I mean, this whole notion of a conservation easement is very mysterious to most people. I think the vast majority of the public has probably never even heard of a conservation easement, and the name sounds kind of threatening. And I mean, you know, what's it all about? And they don't understand it, or they think when we meet with landowners and talk to them about conserving their land, you know, they don't know what to expect and they don't know how it works. And there's a lot of misconceptions. Well, you know, will that mean I won't be able to do this on my land, or I won't be able to do that? Or will it mean that I have to invite the public to use my land? What if I live there and want to keep it for myself? And they don't understand that we can structure the conservation easement, that those documents, those conservation agreements, are all tailored specifically for the particular landowner. It's a long process that we go through, and the process starts by us sitting down with landowners and saying to the landowner, what is your dream for the land? How do you want to see your land used and respected, you know, 5 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now? What is your dream? What do you want your kids and grandkids to be able to see when they come back to this farm or this beautiful piece of rural land? And then we structure that agreement so as to meet that landowner's needs. And as long as we have common ground about certain base assumptions about what types of development we think are inappropriate, you know, we can work with the landowner to craft something. And really, it's a way for them to take their dreams and to put it into something tangible to allow them the comfort of knowing that their desires for the land are going to be respected even after they're gone. And so it's a wonderful thing. And fortunately, through programs like the one today and through other means, I think the public is slowly starting to learn about what are these conservation agreements. And they're starting to see their neighbors do it. And so they talk to their neighbors. And most of our conservation opportunities come from people who know somebody else who's done it. And they say, well, I know that, you know, Joe Smith down the road, he did it, and he's happy with what he did. And so I'd like to talk to you about conservation opportunities. And so, you know, the this sort of thing sells itself when people have the opportunity to learn what it's about, and that it's a way, it's a tool that empowers landowners to protect their land in ways they otherwise would not be so empowered. It's really powerful. And, you know, I come from having grown up in a rural area where my parents owned some land that was really special to me. And they didn't know about those conservation opportunities, you know, 25 years ago or whatever, and that there were ways that the land could be kept intact, or that they might be able to retain the land because of financial incentives and whatnot. And so it's all a process of educating people about conservation opportunities.
It sure is. Do you have, we only have about 10 seconds, do you have an email or something for more info?
Yeah, people can definitely email the Mississippi Valley Conservancy. They can contact me at tim@mississippivalleyconservancy.org.
tim@mississippivalleyconservancy.org. Thank you so much for being with us, Tim. Yeah, thank you. Tim Jacobson, Executive Director of the Mississippi Valley Conservancy, and we also thank Ben Logan for being with us for part of the show, author of The Land Remembers, The Story of a Farm and Its People. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Rob Schroeder for on-air production, and thank you, everybody, for your calls here on the Ideas Network.